This afternoon, we want to take a few moments to present some thoughts regarding the matter of marital sex. There are reasons for this, of course, many of which you are very well aware of, and others that I have encountered as I've been involved in counseling, misconceptions, misunderstandings, that I would at least like to shed a little light on publicly that you might think about them. I'm not certain that I feel we need to try and discuss this in any intimate sense in a public meeting like this, but I do believe that there are principles that we can enunciate that will help us in maintaining the right perspective in this part of our life. Now, the first thing I want to talk about regarding this whole subject is the fact that we are engaged today in our society in a struggle for survival. This is what I call it, a struggle for survival. I think Romans 12:2 speaks very clearly to this point. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. As one of the other versions says, don't let the world around you squeeze you into its mold. That happens to be J.B. Phillips' paraphrase of the New Testament. Don't let the world around you squeeze you into its mold. And we are, in fact, caught in a struggle for survival, particularly in this area concerning our sexual relationship and the entire understanding that we have of God's purpose and intention in this area of our lives. So in this struggle for survival, first of all, we see a great deal of exploitation going on around us. Just plain exploitation. They call it the sexual revolution. They call it sexual freedom. They call it a broader scale of life. All kinds of names are given to some of the concepts that are being disseminated. This is part of the exploitation that's going on. The whole area of the facility of obtaining contraceptives of all kinds has made it possible for this particular phase of life to be indulged in at almost every level. Mothers are teaching their daughters how to use contraceptives as early as 11 and 12 years of age. There's an exploitation of this entire area of life. However, there has no contraceptive been found for the scars of a conscience. And unfortunately, time and time again, those of us who are involved in counseling are called on to try to heal the scars of conscience that has come or that have been produced as a result of some of the exploitation. Recently, I read a letter from a young lady, 23 years of age, an honest, open expression, crying for help. She said, I have been involved in casual sex for a number of years. I have had affairs with so many men, I have lost count. She said, I have reached the place where I seriously wonder if I could ever have a meaningful relationship with any man. I have tried on one or two occasions where I have felt particularly attracted. I have tried to develop a relationship beyond that which I've experienced. And I cannot free my mind. It becomes just another sexual encounter. You see, there's no contraception for that. That is a tragedy. And that is being repeated time and time and time again around us. Don't let the talk, all the free, loose talk, fool you. The results of all of it are not nearly as happy as their claims might sound. Exploitation. But another aspect of the struggle for survival that you and I face is the proliferation of this whole area. Proliferation. By that I simply mean we are surrounded by it at every level of communication. You stop and think. Everything that you look at in one way or another, you will find innuendos of all kinds. Your local newspaper, magazines you pick up, even supposedly good magazines, Time magazine, a news magazine supposedly, or Newsweek, or any of the others. To say nothing of the barrage, the constant barrage we get on radio and television. Everything is sexy today. Shaving lotion is sexy. Now, I use shaving lotion because it helps me heal up the scars where I've cut myself. But I'm told that if I use the right shaving lotion, I'm going to have to fight the girls off. Or another one, a commercial that's being used now. Oh, this is really ludicrous. Ladies, cross your legs. Do you feel that stubble? What you need is this particular razor to give you a sexy shave. Now, that's on TV today. Oh, and it goes on and on and on. You know that. Cars are sexy. You get the right car. Shoes. Sexy shoes. I don't believe in all my life I've ever looked at somebody's shoes to see, you know, if they're sexy or not. I doubt very much that very many people look at my shoes to see if I'm sexy. I don't know. The proliferation of this thing. Now, the reason I mention it is because in this culture where we are being exploited and we are being bombarded, the tragedy is that evangelical Christianity has had very little to say. We have remained basically silent. And as a result, certain things have happened. In the struggle for survival, the reaction has been, one, puritanical withdrawal, or two, personal rejection. Now, as I counsel couples, I find time and time again confusion and conflict in the area of the sexual relationship to a large degree because of puritanical withdrawal. Somehow, because sex has been exploited the way it is being exploited and misused the way it is being misused, those of us who seek to be followers of Jesus Christ give it the connotation of something evil and dirty, and as a result, attitudes are developed which in marriage are difficult to overcome. I've talked with many a couple where the young lady or the young man have had difficulties in adjusting to this area. Usually it's more on the side of the young women because of attitudes that they have developed from their parents, from their environment, from their context of living, where they were given to understand and to believe that sex was something impure, wrong, and the way in which this was communicated was by pointing to all of the things going on around us. The exploitation and the misuse and the proliferation. Puritanical withdrawal and personal rejection. A very real syndrome in our marital relationships today. Well, now, in contrast to this struggle for survival that we've looked at, what is the scriptural orientation that we can get regarding the sexual relationship. What does God have to say about this? What is His attitude toward this? Well, first of all, let me say that the Bible exalts sex. God created, ordained, and blessed this relationship. He made us to function in this area. And in His attitude, He blesses, as well as having ordained this institution of the physical relationship. Genesis 1, 27 and 28. God created man in His own image. In the image of God He created him. Male and female He created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. And so forth. Now there is one aspect of the responsibility of the sexual relationship. Be fruitful and multiply. That's the responsible aspect of it. The responsibility of the results of this relationship. But the second part is found in Genesis 2, 24 and 25. Therefore a man leaves his father and his mother and cleaves to his wife, and they become one flesh. And the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. The sexual relationship has two aspects. One, the responsibility of procreation. And two, the fulfillment of the one flesh concept, which involves the enjoyment that God intended as He made our bodies the way He has. There are two parts to it, very realistically and very definitely. The one flesh, the expression of the total union of commitment with all of its peripheral factors and facets. Now in 1 Corinthians 7, 3 through 5, you remember that passage where Paul reminds us of the mutual responsibility that there is in this aspect of our relationship. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights. That is to say, he should see to it that her needs physically are met. Those are the conjugal rights. And likewise, the wife to her husband. For the wife does not rule over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not rule over his own body, but the wife does. Do not refuse one another this physical relationship, these conjugal rights. Do not refuse one another, except perhaps by agreement for a season, that you may devote yourselves to prayer. But then come together again, lest Satan tempt you through lack of self-control. Nothing could be more clear in its explicit definition of the responsibility that there is in marriage to meet these needs that God has placed within us, the physical needs of the marital relationship. And in defining them in the way He has, God not only recognizes the importance of them, but ordains and blesses that by virtue of instruction regarding how those should be met. Further, in the Song of Solomon, which incidentally is a refreshing expression of God regarding the marital relationship, it has been given many other interpretations. But those who are making careful studies of this, and incidentally, I understand that some of the gentlemen in one of the national seminaries are working on a paraphrase of the Song of Solomon, which will be basically a marriage guide from God's perspective. But in the Song of Solomon, you find a number of references in a positive context to this entire relationship. For example, 2:3, Song of Solomon, chapter 2 and verse 3. Such a statement as an apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among young men. With great delight I sat in his shadow, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. Speaking of this relationship. Or, take the passage in the 8th chapter, verse 3. Oh, that his left hand were under my head, and that his right hand embraced me. This is a very logical and utilized position in the whole process of lovemaking between husband and wife. God speaks of this very openly, very honestly, unembarrassedly. And this is the purpose for this particular session, that we might see the delightful blessing that God intended this should be in our lives, and hopefully remove from our thinking some of the apprehensions or rejections that there might be regarding this part of our experience. There are many other passages, if you'd like to jot them down, in Song of Solomon, which we will not take time to read. But, for example, chapter 6, 1 through 10, and 7, 1 through 9. And then I would like for you to jot these down as I read them to you from the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 5, 15, 18, and 19. And this is what they say. 5:15, drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. And then verse 18, let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. And verse 19, let her affection fill you at all times with delight. Be infatuated always with her love. And of course, this is in the context of not giving yourself to strangers, to prostitutes, to adulterous relationships, but to developing the kind of relationship in the marital union that is mutually satisfying and mutually fulfilling. Now, I'd like for you to put down verse 21 of chapter 5, for the simple reason that this makes a statement very clearly regarding God's attitude towards this entire project. Here's what he says. For a man's ways, this follows immediately what we've just read now. For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all his paths. In that statement, not only is there the concept of God observing, but approving. He watches over him. Watches all his paths. So to the greatest degree possible, God has stated and committed himself regarding this delightful union that he has provided for you and for me, but which has been taken by sources that are non-biblical, has been misused, has been corrupted and dirtied, to such a degree that even now, as I talk to you, there is almost an embarrassed silence because we don't talk about these things very often. Why is that? This should be just as normal to you and to me as men and women who are married in Jesus Christ as talking about prayer or any other union that God has given to us. But because of its misuse, and because of this struggle for survival that I mentioned at first, we are the victims. We who should be enjoying this to its fullest degree are the ones who have the greatest struggles in freeing our minds to enter into and enjoy this relationship as God intended we should. And this is sort of paradoxical. Those who do not know Jesus Christ enter into it with abandon. Improperly, true, but with abandon. And we who know him have so many reservations that it's difficult for us to accept it as God intended that we should. Finally, just a few suggestions. We've seen, first of all, the struggle for survival. Secondly, the scriptural orientation. And now, just a few suggestions. Sex is a wonderful servant, but a terrible master. A wonderful servant, but a terrible master. Therefore, it should not be the primary goal in our marriage relationship. I find that when that happens, it produces nothing but frustration. When the sexual relationship becomes a unit by itself, when it becomes a goal by itself, when it becomes something for which we are seeking a fulfillment or an achievement, there's always frustration. The sexual relationship in marriage must always be kept in the proper perspective as the culmination of a total relationship, not something separate, not something apart, but the culmination of a total relationship. Now, having said that, I want to emphasize very carefully that because that is true, too often, frustration is brought to bear in the sexual relationship where an attempt is made to solve problems there that were not solved in the total relationship. You cannot jump into bed and hope to solve your problems in that relationship that were not solved ahead of time. For the simple reason that a wife's response to the sexual act is about 80% emotional or psychological or mental, however you want to call that, and about 20% physical. A man's response is just the opposite, about 80% physical and 20% emotional, mental, psychological. Therefore, if there are unresolved problems, it will be virtually impossible for the wife to free her mind and her emotions to enter into that relationship with any degree of satisfaction, and it will produce nothing but frustration. The second suggestion, after looking at the fact that sex is a wonderful servant, but a terrible master, the second suggestion is, avoid the trap of comparison. You read books, you read about these other situations, some books, by the way, are not all that helpful as far as our physical relationships are concerned. I am not convinced, if you will permit my very honest frankness and my personal evaluation, I am not convinced, nor do I agree with some of the statements that would indicate that if a relationship is all that it should be, then you can expect a woman to find sexual fulfillment 100% of the time. And if she does not, there's something wrong with the relationship. The facts are that all kinds of studies that have been carried on have proven that 30 to 40% of wives are very inconsistent in experiencing total fulfillment and yet find complete satisfaction without that if they don't sense the frustration of pressure trying to achieve it. And I think this has been carried into too many extremes, and this is one of the areas where I find continual frustration. Young couples reading books, trying this, trying that, working hard, listening to everybody, and getting so frustrated they can't even enjoy the relationship at all, because they're trying to achieve something. God gave the relationship to be enjoyed. Achievement comes as a result of enjoyment, not the other way around. Frustration comes as a result of trying to achieve in this particular area. There must be There must be a relaxation and a total giving of one another emotionally in enjoyment if fulfillment is to be experienced. Avoid the trap of comparison. Every couple is unique regarding their needs. Every woman is unique regarding her needs. Communicate. Discuss. What is it that would meet the needs of my mate most effectively? Be willing to agree on that and to work at that level in your relationship. Now, when we talk about a woman's fulfillment, which becomes a subject of its own, I simply want to make the following three suggestions. These are general suggestions. I have already stated that I feel there are many fallacies that are being taught about this. Therefore, I think you need to re-examine your own experience level with one another and find what is mutually acceptable and satisfactory for you. But the first thing I want to suggest is pray regarding your total involvement in the experience. Someone has suggested that because the sexual relationship requires, in a very real sense, the abandonment of a wife in her attitude, in her spirit, an abandonment to her husband, then her image, or, if you please, her response to her husband in their total relationship will determine how quick, how willing she is to abandon herself in that way in the sexual relationship. But because it is an abandonment, it has to be recognized on that level. And wives need to pray to be willing to do that, to really give themselves up emotionally. Those who have made studies in this area say that when a woman experiences total fulfillment in the sexual relationship, in a very real sense, she has lost control of herself and totally abandoned herself to that relationship. I believe that's true. And I believe that that's why many women have difficulties in this area. It isn't that there's something wrong with them physically. It's that emotionally, somehow, they're unable to give themselves, to abandon themselves at that point to their husbands and, of course, before the Lord. Secondly, I think a woman needs to work at developing an enthusiastic response. Now, that's something you have to work at. That's something you have to learn. An enthusiastic response to the physical relationship. And that might even mean being the aggressor once in a while. That might even mean being the one to initiate, to make the suggestions, to be a little flirtatious with your husband. There's nothing wrong with that. The right time and the right place. An enthusiastic response. And then third, I think that a husband needs to be very careful, extremely careful, regarding putting any pressure on his wife to perform in a certain way. I think that's extremely important. It only takes one or two times, and a scar is left that takes a long time to heal. Husbands, be careful about putting that kind of pressure to perform. Now, finally, in this matter of suggestions, I want to give you two or three differences between men and women that pertain to the sexual relationship. To a man, the sexual relationship is deeply associated with his male image of himself. Therefore, if for some reason there is a misunderstanding regarding whether or not his wife is being satisfied in that area of their relationship, it's a direct reflection on him and his male qualifications. At least it is in his thinking. So the sexual relationship is deeply associated with a male or the husband's male image of himself. With the wife, the sexual act is deeply associated with the basic need to be needed. The basic need to be needed. The performance is not that important, but to be needed is important. Another comparison. For the man, most men are willing to, and I hope you'll take this statement just in its basic context. Don't examine it too carefully. Try and get the impression that I'm trying to communicate. Most men are willing to give love to get sex, while women are willing to give sex hoping to get love. I think you understand what I'm trying to communicate in that statement. A third comparison. We've stated this in a different way, but let me put it at this point. For a man, the sexual relationship involves a strong physical desire accompanied by emotional needs. For the woman, it's a strong emotional need accompanied with physical needs. It's far more psychological than physical for a woman. Incidentally, this is just a parenthetical thought, but that's one of the reasons why historically it is men who go to prostitutes and not women. Because men can go and have physical needs met without emotional necessities. But for a woman to have any kind of a fulfilling experience in this area, it must involve her total being, this emotional part of her. And finally, for a man, it's more important how often, and for a woman, it's more important how. For a man, how often, and for a woman, how. This final statement, the sexual relationship in a marriage, if it is going to be a fulfilling one, if it is going to be an experience that God intended we should have, I simply want to remind you that it requires commitment, not simply consent. Commitment, not simply consent. And so we come back to Ephesians 5:21. Be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ. The key is selflessness. Selflessness. Now, those are the thoughts that I wanted to share with you. And you can see that they are broad. They are in principle form. We have not gone into detail intentionally. I would like for you to consider those.